You're listening to Unique Leaders Podcast. I'm Megan DiMartino. Success is in the story. Each week, I'll be speaking with a unique leader, not only in their field, but in their lives. Join us for a glimpse of their passion and talents. There's always a surprise in their story. Be the first to hear. Hello, 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 and welcome to Unique Leaders Live. I'm Megan DiMartino, and it is Friday, the 18th of December. This is the last Friday before Christmas. Can we believe it? This very, very unique year. And it is my joy to introduce to you a truly unique leader today. Unique leaders came from just really interviewing people or visiting really with people that I knew and it during the lockdown. And in that, it was amazing how people resonated with their stories. And what I often heard was, wow, I never knew that about so-and-so, or wow, I thought that that was unattainable. And so I realized that it was about sharing individual stories. We're truly unique leaders, and we all are unique leaders, but their secrets are in their stories. So each week we visit with a unique leader and they share their story of success and where they are today, but where it began. So without further ado, I am, as I said, joyful to introduce to you today, the Friday before Christmas, Miss Lisa Copeland.
Hello, Megan.
Hello, my love. Thank you for joining me today. I know you're busy, busy.
No, my gosh. It was so great. And I'm telling, I loved your intro video. Some of my very best friends in the whole world, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's Amy and LB and Glenn Lundy and Jan Goss. And oh, it was just beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. And it's been a really delight to put this together because it gives people like yourself an opportunity to share your story because you are out there, and you've been out there, so to speak, for years in different arenas, but that didn't just happen. And so it gives people hope and an infinite understanding that they too can just get off the couch, as I say, and get moving and keep moving. So let's go back to young Lisa. Share where you grew up and a little bit about that period of your life.
So young Lisa grew up in San Jose, California, and my mom was, I'm sure she's watching this, she was a grad student, went and got her PhD later in life, so she did great things. My dad was a Silicon Valley entrepreneur and traveled the world. Lisa was a rebel. I was very hard-headed and stubborn like my dad. And you know, my mom would love to blame it on my dad. And I would say I'm probably more like him. And so that was my young life. I rode horses. I showed horses for years growing up. So horses were my thing.
Let's stay there for a minute. So okay. Mom was, again, an achiever. She went back to school and got, you know, her master's and, PhD. Susan, I'm sorry, your PhD.
Yeah, exactly. That's a big deal.
She will correct us, or me. And your father was an entrepreneur in Silicon Valley. Yes. That's a beautiful area, you know, Northern California. And so you enjoyed that whole lifestyle. And when did you realize, was it then, or did you, well, let me say, ask you this. How long did you stay in Northern California, and when did you move out of that area, and what brought you out of that area?
So I was there until I was about 15, and then I came to Arlington for the summer and lived with my dad's sister, came out to visit her and hang out with her for a little bit. And I just had a cool opportunity to be able to, you know, go to school there, and I wanted to. And it was just different. And so it was great. But boy, what a difference between Northern California and Texas, Arlington, Texas. I can tell you that right now. It was just a different mindset. And I really resonated with the people in Texas. Like, I came to visit, and it was one of those things. It's like, I just never wanted to go back to California. Mm-hmm. And so I've been in Texas ever since. And I love Texas. And I love the people in Texas. And I love this. You know, I think I love the most, I love the spirit of Texas. Like, there's just nothing going to hold us back, hold us down, or any of the above.
I was older than you, but that was exactly, meaning you were 15. But when I started traveling in business nationally, and when I would come to Texas, it was like, wow, I like this place. I like these people. I like the mindset, as you said.
Yeah.
And so when I had the opportunity to take a job that brought me to Fort Worth, Texas, I took that opportunity. And so you're right. It is a very unique, again, place, and we recognize that. But also unique in the fact that you came by yourself, so to speak, at 15. Is that, so your parents were still in California?
Yeah. And that was my choice. Like, my mom was totally against it. And she reminds me of that every once in a while, but she's glad I did do it because otherwise I wouldn't have met my husband. But, you know, I just called them one day and I was just like, you know, cause my aunt had said, you know, if you want to, I mean, you know, you could go to school a semester here, and you know, and times were just different then, you know? And so I thought, well, maybe I'll try it for a semester. You know, I just, it was just one of those things. It was just about that organic also. You know, I don't think you could do all of that today, like what we did back in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, and it was just, it was an adventure. I guess that was the best way to put it. And, but I loved it here. And so we stayed here, and then, my mom and dad ended up moving here once we had kids, and like, so the whole family came to Texas. So it took them a little bit longer to figure out, how great Texas was. But, you know, my dad was really in love with it when he came out here and saw the kind of real estate he could purchase. The first house they bought, I called it South Fork. It was not as big. Well, it was about, probably about as big as South Fork, but it was really cool because how much more you could get for your money, out here, and just the way of life. You know, it just wasn't the hustle bustle. And my dad had just retired. Of course, my mom had her PhD. So, I mean, she could work anywhere. So she went to work for the state of Texas, and, you know, it's just about pivoting. It's about life. And I think that I've always been open to that. And so people have always said to me, oh, I've seen you, you're a car dealer and then real estate, mortgage company. I'm like, yeah, because I like pivoting doesn't scare me. And right. So it probably started at the age of 15 when I called my parents. And I'm like, Aunt Charlotte said I could go to school here this year.
Exactly. You know, we'll get to others, but that is the foundation of you and that unique spirit, that spirit that it just is embodies you. And I think most, I'm going to use the word adventure, you know, as I speak to people, not just in this show, but over the years, people that really strive out and push out the box are deep in their hearts are adventurers. They really are seekers of, you know, just out there.
Yeah, so, I'm just not afraid to try something new. And so it's strange that this show kind of made me think of that. But it just started at a young age. It's like, if someone gives me an opportunity that sounds great, and if I can do it, I'm probably going to do it. If it's, you know, legal, moral, and if it's for the betterment of my family and of me and my community, I'm probably going to do it.
So here you were in school, and you're, as you said, your folks came later. Now, do you have siblings?
I do. I've got a sister who also ended up moving here later in life. So she lives here in Austin, and she's lived here, gosh, she's lived here 30 years, but probably 20 years, 25 years. So yeah, she's my younger sister, and she works for AT&T and been there for 15 years. And so, yeah, like the whole family's here.
The trailblazer, Lisa.
And then I guess I should say my grandparents, who now are deceased, but they also moved out here.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, and my grandpa loved, and he was California, born and raised San Francisco Bay Area, whatever, 49ers fan, but he loved his big black diesel truck he bought when he was in Texas. And, you know, he used to wear a cowboy hat out in California, and he wore his cowboy hat here, and he just owned being a Texan. So, you know.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. See, that is a piece I did not know, that you were the trailblazer of the whole family.
I really was. Yeah.
The whole family. So then you went to college.
Yes. You had the Fashion Art Institute of Dallas. Yep.
Yes. Okay. Yep. In Dallas. Yes. I'm familiar with it.
Yeah.
And so you went to school. And so from fashion, how did you, you used the word pivot, how did you pivot into what you, the next phase, so to speak?
Oh, well, the next phase for me was the automotive industry. And that really happened by accident. And, you know, I really did. I was, I had a good job in fashion. I really didn't. But at the time I did, I was an assistant manager at the mall. And so I got like, I don't know, $4 an hour plus commission, but I was the top salesperson. So I was making like $8 or $9 an hour way back then. So that wasn't bad money back in the day for somebody young. And I wrecked my car in front of my husband's house. He was not my husband then. And I knocked on the door, and kind of the rest is history. You know, because back then they didn't have cell phones. I couldn't call my dad. I still remember him having to pull out the phone book and look up the Contempo Casuals at the Dallas Galleria Mall to call my boss, like trying to get a hold of my dad to say I just wrecked my car. You know, it was just crazy. It was just, things were different back then. So he and I started dating, and yeah, it's so funny.
The Avon lady rang the doorbell, and
you never know what circumstances are going to be, but you know, I had not been paying my car insurance. That's the rest of the story. So of course my mom and dad sent the money for my bills every month. And like any good fashion major, I was spending it at my job at the mall. Mm-hmm. And so I never, you know, I mean, I was so far behind on my car insurance. And so when I called the insurance company to go, "Hey, I wrecked my car. I need a new one." kind of went down like that. And the guy's like, or the lady was like, "You haven't paid like in 3 or 4 months, you don't have insurance." And I'm like, "What do you mean I don't have insurance?" So I don't even remember how the whole thing shook out. I just didn't have insurance. So my new friend at the time, James Copeland, said he had just graduated from college and he was selling cars kind of in the interim. And he said, "Well, you ought to sell cars, because if you sell cars, then you can get a free car to drive." And I was like, "Oh, and then I wouldn't have to have insurance." So it was just that naive and just that young naive. And so I tried really hard to get a job. And nobody wanted to hire me. You know, women, especially back then, they didn't want them in the car business. And my sales experience was selling skirts. But somehow, through a mutual friend, I weaseled my way into a job selling cars at the number one Chevy store in the – actually, it was the number one domestic dealership in the United States of America in Dallas. And so then I was off to the races from there.
Wow. What was the name of that dealer?
Jim Johnson Chevrolet in Plano.
Mm-hmm. Wow. But that takes persistence, meaning, like you said, you didn't
have car. I was desperate. I'll tell you, I didn't have a car. And Dallas, I don't think Dallas still has a good public transportation system, but they certainly did not have one back then. Mm-hmm. So either I was going to be walking or taking a bus, or I was going to get a job as a car salesman. So, you know, I think a lot of times when our backs get put up against a wall, I think we learn how good we really are.
That's right. And now, was James at that dealership, or was he?
No. No, he was at another dealership across town, but it was a Chevy store. He ended up eventually coming to that dealership and going to work over there. But at the time, he was not there.
And so in the beginning of that experience of selling cars, did you love it? Did you hate it? What did you feel about that experience?
I loved it. I mean, I didn't know anything. I had never even been inside of a car dealership when I got the job, because my dad had always bought my cars and like brought them home. He's like, "Here's your car." I mean, so I had never even been inside of a car dealership. So it was so different to me, and I knew nothing. And I didn't know much about cars. I mean, none of it, but I knew about people. Mm-hmm. And I learned very quickly that I was very good at connecting with my clients. And in fact, they liked the fact that I was not a car salesman. And they were okay with the fact that I didn't know about, you know, how many cylinders or how this or that or how it works, and that I would have to go ask a lot of questions. And so many clients told me, they were like, "It's so refreshing to deal with somebody who I don't think is, you know, trying to rip us off." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "No, I just want you to buy a car from me." And so, I mean, I built this huge business and I built this huge referral business. You know, and so like within 6 months, I wasn't even really having to stand outside and wait for somebody to come in, because I had so many clients coming in the front door asking for me.
So you recognized early on that it was building that relationship and building a referral business. Yeah.
And I realized early on it's about authenticity, because I didn't try to tell these people I knew anything. Like, if anything, I went the other way. I'm like, "Look, I just started selling cars." And, you know, I tell them the story about how I needed a demo, and people, they loved it. Yeah. You know, versus this slick, "I'm the number one salesman," like, you know. And so I've always taught people, as I teach them in sales, it's like, people do business with people they know, like, and trust, right? I mean, everybody says it, from Napoleon Hill. I mean, it's so if people know you, like you, and trust you, and if you can show them your real self, your authentic self, then they're much more likely to do business with you and to refer you to their family and friends.
You know, Lisa, there's a little piece to me that you probably don't know. Ooh, but when I was putting together Glycolic, I had left my corporate job and I needed some cash flow there. And I sold cars at Overseas Motors in Georgetown, in Fort Worth, Texas. Yes, I sold.
How did I not know that, Megan? How have you never told me that over the years?
I don't know. I really don't know. But I worked for Overseas Motors selling Jaguars for about a year.
Did you like it?
I loved it. Just said, loved it.
It's not a bad job, especially if you're with the Jaguar dealership, you know?
No, it was great. And they also, I heard often what you said, they loved the fact that I knew nothing. But it was my authenticity and, you know, my sharing about building another business and so forth. And because I made it very clear to them that this was an interim job. But I often, with you guys and getting to know you all, I don't mean you, Lisa, but meaning subsequent, I thought, you know, maybe that would be a good thing to do, is just sell cars, because I very much enjoyed it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially in the high end, you know, Chevy was a little bit dicier. It was a little bit tougher of a, it was a little more competitive, right? Because there was, you know, 15 different Chevy dealerships in town. Mm-hmm. So, but like when, if you're in the high end luxury sales and, you know, and I really saw that at my last dealership with Alfa Romeo, you know, mm-hmm. when you're in luxury sales, like you were with Jaguar, it's such a different experience and it's really a relationship business.
Yeah.
Yes. And yeah, and it's great. Like I've told the whole world, if tomorrow, you know, real estate fell apart and I had to go do something, if someone said tomorrow, you've got to go make some money, I would go to a luxury car dealership and I would just sit at my desk and start calling people I know and take orders, because that's about all it would take.
And folks who are listening, that right there is a major nugget of what we've just spoken about. Is that A, build that relationship, get that experience, and you will never have to look for a job again.
Ever.
Because you'll use those tools again and again and again. So I want to ask, in this period of time, how long did it take to get married to Mr. Copeland?
Oh, good question. Let's see. I met him in 1983 and we got married in 1988. So 5 years.
Oh. So now
he did not want to get married.
Wow.
He always said that he would be 30 years old when he got married, and because he is older than me, y'all. So yeah, I'm not as old as he is. And so he said he'd be 30 years old when he got married, and he turned 30 in October, and we got married in November.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, you have to know my husband. When he says something, like, he lives and dies by it. So 30 days later.
Oh my goodness. But yeah. All those years you were dating and you were significant others in that.
Yeah, there was times that, you know, we might've been dating other people too. So.
Okay. So the guy that you rang the doorbell was in your life, but yet you.
It took us a couple years to say, okay, we're going to be exclusive. So mm-hmm. yeah. And then there was a move to California in between that. I moved back to California for a year. Cause I got a good job. I got a big job offer. And I did that for a year. And then he came out to California and asked me to come back. So
often it takes that.
Sometimes you do. You just got to move away and show those boys what they're missing, right?
Exactly. Very much so. I did not have that experience personally, but I've seen that happen with other friends, that they have to go, I think I do want that person. Yes.
Yeah. And I was gone for over a year. So.
Yeah. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, as they say.
Yeah, I think it did in this case.
So you married and then, but you was then came back and did you stay in the car industry?
Yeah, I did. So I was in California. So, I was in the car industry, up until, you know, from when I told you I started up until, JT was about 3 months old, my oldest son and my oldest son, listen to me, my youngest child, my only son. So, and he's 29. So, I stayed in it for that long and then I got out and it was just too hard. It was just really hard having two kids and you know, James was in the car business. It was too much to juggle, nights and weekends, mm-hmm. you remember.
Right. Right.
And so I got in the mortgage business mm-hmm. because I had a big finance background from the car business. And mm-hmm. so I got the mortgage business and did very well and ended up founding a company my husband still runs today, which is Austin Mortgage Associates. Mm-hmm. So we've been in business. Well, we've been in the mortgage business about 23 years, but Austin Mortgage was founded in January of 2000. So we've been in business almost 21 years, same office, same location, sitting right there in Round Rock, Texas.
So that brings us close to when you and I met in about, I don't want to jump ahead, but.
I know where you're going. I know where you're going.
Well, it's an, I said when I was, having a Glenn Lundy on, I mentioned your, in Joy Boutique. I said it was a Rodeo Drive, a boutique in Round Rock, Texas, is how I describe it. No, it truly was, and truly how you ran it was truly emblematic of you. But we met at a church, local church, Celebration Church.
Yes.
And now your children, though, so you would, you know, James was running the mortgage business and you were, and mom, right. And then you said, what prompted you to do that? Where, what happened with that?
So gosh, I've got to think what year that was.
I met you about 2005-ish, six.
Okay. So I was running our mortgage company as the CEO. I was very, very busy in the mortgage industry. And I just made a decision one day. I told my husband, I'm like, I want to open up a boutique because that was my fashion roots. And he was like, what? I was so busy. We had so many employees. I'm like, I can do both. And I did for a couple of years. I ended up hiring a manager for the boutique because I did have a real day job that actually paid. The boutique was really, I was happy every month to break even. And that was because I'd buy one for Enjoy and one for Lisa. So it was kind of like, you know, it was a path. Like, I wouldn't know you as well. Like, I met so many friends, like Amy Dillon or Amy Westbrook. I met her because Lori Champion brought her to me to do my marketing, and Sarah Boone, I've met so many friends and people that I worship and love because of that boutique.
You know, I'll tell you a funny thing about Susan Hurley, who just had it Wednesday. She said to me recently, we were kind of connecting the dots, and she said to me, you know, I think I saw, now I've heard many people have said this to me, I think I saw you, meaning not met you, but saw you at Enjoy Boutique.
Isn't that crazy? It was such a place of connection. And so people used to call it the non-alcoholic Cheers. And I'm like, non-alcoholic? We always had wine in the thing in the back and the refrigerator in the back. It was a great place. And so I had assumed somebody else's lease. It was in a high-end shopping center. And so when my lease was up in 2.5 years, I did not renew the lease because I had gotten word that there was going to be a new outdoor shopping center built in Austin, Texas that would give me a run for my money, aka the Domain, home of Neiman Marcus and all that. So timing was great, you know, but the friends and the connections I made. Yeah, I think Susan Hurley, Amy, Renee, you, oh my gosh. I mean, I just, yeah.
It was really a wonderful time. It really was.
It was. Another thing that I just said, what the heck? I want a boutique. I'm going to go do it.
So I'm going to give a little snippet and then I want you to go to the Domain. But the last time I saw you, because my life kind of flipped upside down personally, I mean, physically was in your, you know, connecting, was when you did that fashion show at the Marriott.
Oh my gosh.
And that was one of your roots to the fashion show, right?
And I saw Camille Walker on your intro. Mm-hmm. And the way everyone knows Camille Walker is because she was my client in the mortgage business. And I made her model in that fashion show. And I mean, she was terrified. And then I introduced her to Jan Goss Gibson. Mm-hmm. I knew that they would be close.
She shared that story about the fashion show.
Yeah. She was so mad at me. She's like, I just wanted to throw up, fall off the stage. My knees were knocking. My lips were, she said, my teeth were chattering. But she's so beautiful. I'm like, Camille, you've got to be on that stage. You're a gorgeous. And Renee Bangelsdorf tells the story about how I made her clip in a ponytail and how she strutted on the stage. And that was the first time that she said, like, I just knew I could go out there and I could be in front of people. And look at her now. Oh my gosh. So like, but even the fashion show did crazy things for women. So it was awesome.
It really was. And the way it was choreographed was so professional. Well,
which was Amy Westbrook. I hired her company to put on the show, right? So she did all the, you know, the show.
Yeah. And I had a booth, Lisa, in the lobby of the Marriott. She then sold, enterprising young lady as she is, booths. And so my spa and product line had
I remember that. Yes. And I actually carried your product.
Yes, you did.
I carried it. Yes, because I love it. And I was like, oh my God, this stuff is amazing. Everybody everyone who shops with me needs to buy the Novitas skincare because it's so wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. But that is, it's again, the genesis of so many relationships. So, okay, so you allowed the boutique to close. And how did you go from there to the back to the auto industry and the Fiat?
So I was doing some consulting at the time, and I was really burned out on the mortgage business. I guess that's the best way to put it. And I told my husband, I'm like, I just need to do something else. I was burned out because I was doing so much business that I was just kind of over it. And so I had done some consulting back in the auto industry since I had some roots there. And of course, I'd had a lot of success in the mortgage business. So what I've always done consulting on is sales, right? How to go to the next level, how to get unstuck, and so I had an opportunity to do the consulting in the automotive industry, and I had a few clients. And one of my clients just came to me and said, hey, I'm going to give you X amount of dollars and X amount of time, and I've got an opportunity to relaunch Fiat to America. And I want you to put together the proposal and start working on it. And I was like, well, that sounds exciting. So by the time I was done with the proposal, and it was so well received, and I had other people that worked on it with me, it wasn't just me, and it was so well received by the brand, I was like, I want to be a dealer. Like, I felt like it was my brand. And so again, another moment in time, because I had never been anything higher in the automotive industry than a finance director. So mm-hmm. to be a dealer principal, you're typically, you have been a general manager, you have run the gamut. And so I had to kind of jump in head first. I had a huge learning curve. Nobody really, to teach me. So a lot of it was self-education. And I write about that in my book. I write about it a lot in my book, in the fact that, you can't always depend on somebody else. Even the people you think that might help you, they're not going to help you most of the time. People don't really root for people. And I really learned that in that whole experience. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go get it done myself. So I had 3 weeks a year of vacation. I spent every bit of it going to conferences, taking classes, paying for my own stuff, spending my own personal time becoming educated, because I couldn't fail. And there was nobody that was going to make sure that I didn't fail except for me. And you know what? I'm okay with that. I really am.
It was a huge investment as well, not just from that, what you just said, but your own personal investment, but financially. So there was so much riding on your shoulders.
Yes. You're right. Yes. Because I had so much money in the Fiat deal personally. And, mm-hmm. It really taught me. And now as I teach entrepreneurs and people that are breaking in the real estate business, which I know we'll get there, so I won't go there too heavy. But, you can't depend on me for your success. You can't depend on Tariq El Moussa for your, you can't depend on anybody but you. And it's your responsibility to get up every single morning and educate yourself and figure out this whole life of being an entrepreneur. So, it's kind of been my whole life, kind of the school of hard knocks, kind of figuring out by myself and whatever. But that is the best person that you all can rely on, is to rely on yourself and your spideys and making things happen for yourself. Because if you rely on your boss, coworkers, people that you think are your friends or you think are fellow leaders, they're not going to help you. They're not.
Let's stay here for a minute, because this is a very key piece. Mm-hmm. Very. Because I truly see, and as you and I have discussed, people expect, it's that expectancy of others to make things happen for themselves. It does not happen that way. You have to depend on yourself. And it's whatever tool, whether it's coaches and mentors and so forth, but it's still ultimately gleaning that information for yourself to rely on yourself.
Megan, it is. And, over the years, I've had people come to work for me in many different businesses, right? A mortgage company. I used to own an insurance company, too. So I'm surprised I was not your insurance agent. So I've owned an insurance company, a mortgage company, a car dealership, now a real estate brokerage. And every single time people are like, oh, I'm going to come to work for you, because they expect me to make it happen. And I'm like, you know what? I try to lay it out in the beginning. I won't make it happen. I will open doors, or I will lead by example, or I will point you in the right direction. But at the end of the day, if you're going to be successful, only person who can make it happen is you. So I am grateful for my last experience in the car business, because I learned the hard way that nobody is going to stand with you, support you, or help you. You've got to make it happen yourself. So when you accomplish the big things, and when great things happen, it gives you a 10x, 100x the confidence when you pull it off, because that everything inside of you made it happen.
And don't you agree, Lisa, that even if from the world, and I'm not saying this was you or your experience, but even if the world perceives that it wasn't successful, if, like you just used the word term, pulled it off, meaning from what you set out to do, and you accomplish that, that only you also know that you've accomplished that.
Right.
You know, I mean, because for instance, let's just take the auto industry. You know, this dealer's been in business for 50 years, a family and so forth. Well, that doesn't make it necessarily successful, meaning that your time with that was so very successful.
Yeah. And people, you know, and when you hear the story, like, this is, you know, one little book I wrote, but like this, you know, when you write a book, this is the book, because you always write about your successes. What I'd love to write the book on is everywhere I failed, because then it would be like the whole series of the Encyclopedia Britannia, which is that how you say it? I mean, remember those? I mean, I remember the sales person would come to the door and bring us a new one.
Yes.
And anyways, but that being said, you know, I mean, you've got to learn to fail forward. And when you're very reliant on yourself, you do fail a lot. Like, I had a lot of failures and a lot of challenges learning something and having to go from here to the highest level immediately, and really just being out there on an island. And so, you know, you really see what you're made of, but you also have to know that you're going to make mistakes along the way. And God knows I have made plenty of them along the way. And it's all about how you recover from that mistake. And the recovery is, number one, you realize what the mistake was, and you don't do it again. And number three, you forgive yourself, you dust yourself off and go, okay, let's go. It's time to go again.
Go again. And that's the key right there, is to keep going and not stop. Take that information and keep going. But you have an amazing story to share with our listeners about, and I don't want to use the incorrect words, but your bet or joust, or how did you tie together with the president of Fiat?
Yes. So there'll be one person in your life that, you know, as all of you go along your careers, you know, I want everybody out there who's listening to this podcast to think about who's the one person today, right? As we're heading out of a weird year. I'm not going to say a bad year. I didn't have a bad year. It was a weird year. Okay. It was a different year. It was a year of pivots and all kinds of stuff. But so as you head out of 2020 and you go into 2021, I want to challenge your listeners to, who is the one person that you would meet that could change your life? And what are you willing to do to meet them? And I set the story up by that because in 2012, again, as I'm kind of on an island and, you know, sink or swim with my life savings invested in this, I shouldn't say mine and my husband's life savings invested in this, you know, relaunch of Fiat to America, and me just, like, you know, again, on an island. I had heard a speech by a gentleman by the name of Sergio Marchionne, and I'd heard it in 2010. And 2010 was a weird year in the auto industry, right? Chrysler was on the brink of bankruptcy, as was General Motors. Ford was hanging on by, anyways, you know, the whole country was in trouble. They were in peril. And I heard a speech by a man who was the chairman of the board of Fiat, Chrysler, Maserati, global chair. Fiat, Chrysler, Maserati, Alfa Romeo, Ferrari, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram. Most powerful man in the auto industry, head of the European Auto Union. And I heard him give a speech, and it was called A Promise for a Promise. And he basically looked at a bunch of weary dealers and he said, you know what? I know that our quality has suffered. I know we've had some issues, but you know what, Mr. Dealer out there, you haven't done a good job either. You've not taken care of our customers. Our customer service scores are terrible. Your dealership facilities are atrocious, blah, blah, blah. So you want me to do my part? I'm going to promise you these things. But for me to do it, you have to do your part. So I, you know, this is our contract today. It's going to be a promise for a promise. And I was so inspired by that speech that when I became a Fiat dealer, I said to the head of the Fiat brand at the time, I said, what would it take to meet Marchionne? I said, he's like, you're never going to meet Marchionne. Get over it. He's got 6,000 retailers around the world. He's the chairman of the board, head of Ferrari. Like, it's not happening. And I said, oh, okay. So I left it there because we were still a new dealer then. Well, as we were the first dealer in the country to open, and I was taking a big leadership role within the brand with all the emerging dealers, I kept bugging him. And every month my store came in number one in the country. And so I said, okay, look, Marchione has to know who we are because Fiat was his baby. I want to meet him. And he's like, you're not going to meet him. And so I said, what will it take? And he was just like, you have to break the world sales record. Not me, but my team. You have to, you know, your team needs to break the world sales record. Great. What's that number? He did some research. He got back to me. He said, you're going to have to sell 100 of the small, the Cinquecento, the 500. You'll have to sell 100 of those in a 30-day period. End of story. So I said, okay, that's the number. So if that happens, we meet Marchione. Yes, yes. So long story short, my team goes into overdrive. We do not hit it the first month. we did like 92. Yeah. Excuse me. So I called him back and I'm like, he's like, great, you're number one in the country. I'm so proud of you. And I'm like, no, we need to get back to the bet. I go, I need a 1 month extension. And he said, you can't get there. Because the factory can see our inventory. You know, they've got line of sight to everything, what I had coming in for inventory, what I had in stock, because I had sold so many cars the month before. Mm-hmm. And so I dwindled my inventory. And I said, you don't worry about where I'm going to get cars. I just need you to extend the bet. And he said, okay. And so again, this is where relationships come in, because I had helped so many of the dealers around the country and really been out there making sure to help them succeed because I wanted the brand to succeed. I started dialing for dollars and I had dealers from all over the country. But the biggest one was my dear friend, Tony, he was in McKinney at the time. He now runs Ferrari of Houston, and he pretty much released to me most of his inventory. And which was going to cost him $100,000. He's like, but I want you to win. I want you to do this because it'll make automotive news, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And I was buying cars. So you have to imagine we're in the shopping center in the Domain and there's these huge trucks coming and loaded with cars, dumping them off. And people are like, oh my God, what are you doing? I go, you can't sell something you don't have. And we're going to break this world sales record. So we did it. My team was absolutely phenomenal. We closed at 109 units. And so I called the head of Chrysler, of course, Fiat, and he knew it. He was watching it. And the next day, and he's like, Lisa, I have not told Marchione. None of us thought this could happen. He's not coming. Like, I don't even know why I made this crazy bet with you. He said, George Clooney does all of our advertising and he does all of our marketing in Italy. And that's how it is in Europe. You know, mega stars do TV commercials in Europe. They won't do them here. And so you all can go to YouTube and you can actually see George Clooney in 2012. He was Fiat spokesperson in Italy. And he said, so, you know, we've got J-Lo, we've got Pitbull, we've got whatever. And he goes, but we're going to fly you on the Chrysler jet to Italy and you're going to have dinner with George Clooney. And I'm like, no. First of all, that's never going to fly at my house. Oh, hey, babe, I'm going to Italy to have dinner with George Clooney. Really? That'd be like him saying, oh, I'm going to go to Italy and have dinner with Giselle. It's like, no, you're not. So that wasn't going to happen. But even if my husband wanted to play along, meeting Clooney would not change my life. And I said, no, only Marchione will do. So a lot of negotiation went in. They called Marchione. Marchione was so flattered that I chose him over George Clooney that he flew in on his G5. And at the time, he was under death threats in Europe because he was the head of the European Auto Union and he was trying to bust the unions. And so he had to send in a whole security team to my dealership the night before. They were on our roofs. They had to shut down the roads around my store. He was brought in a motorcade. I mean, nuts. And he and I had a private meeting and I was so nervous and we sat back there. And the first thing he said to me was, he was Italian. He's passed away a couple years ago, but he said, you chose me over George Clooney. And I said, I did. I said, because I know that you would be the one to change my life. And he did. He made some major moves for me and made some appointments for me, built me my own car with my own VIN number named after me. He did a lot for me. So he was the one person that changed the trajectory of my career forever, because to this day, I still get paid to consult. I still get paid to speak because of Marchione. And that's what I would challenge all of you. And it's not easy. Like, you may have to go break a world sales record. I don't know what it is, because to meet somebody of that magnitude, you've got to do something big. But you got to do what I did. I put my blinders on. I put my head down. I mean, the people I worked with told me, not my team, but the other people in the organization told me I was crazy. It's never going to happen. I'm embarrassing them. Why am I making these big statements in automotive news that you're a joke? And I'm like, no, I'm going to meet Mark Ioanni. And it changed my life. It changed my career forever.
And it's, so just to recap for our listeners, it's that it may not be someone of that magnitude, but right. but there are people and is a person that you have wanted to connect with and know that that person, the power of association, that will truly change the trajectory of your career and your life. And so this is a perfect time to sit back and really do that soul searching and think through that. You know, who and what will truly make that difference in your career and in your lives? Yeah.
And then you have to think about what are you willing to do to get to that person? Because people that are that high profile, you can't usually get to them, right? And so maybe you take it down a notch, but again, you can't be somebody who just, you know, emails people, hey, I want to have a meeting. That isn't going to happen. So it's a two-way street. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mark Ioanni had a brand that left America as Fix It Again Tony. He was having a hard time getting any traction on the brand as the chairman of the board, mm-hmm. except for my dealership did. And so, you know, it benefited him. Mm-hmm. And then the story was so good. And, the press went nuts with the story over George Clooney, but it was all true.
Yeah. But it's also the naysayers, because that's the other thing. The naysayers are what can stop you in your tracks. And that's with
any
situation. So you just put your blinders on and said, this is what I'm doing. And then you, like your friend up in McKinney, who got behind you bringing the inventory in, because they saw you meant business, you were going to do it, and they were going to come along with you. And so that's
another. And I actually had him on the front row.
I'm sure.
I brought him on the front row, and I brought him back to meet Mr. Mark Ioanni. And I said, it's because of this man right here. Mm-hmm. So he went from being a Fiat dealer to now he's a Ferrari dealer in Houston. So there was, so.
Yeah. The residual benefit for his life as well. Absolutely. Yeah.
It was good for all of our lives for sure.
Yes. Yes. But a wonderful story, and it will go on forever. You know, it's part of you, which is wonderful as well. So then after that season, when you realize, well, let's go into that a bit, because here was, you attained that notoriety. And so and I'm not equating this to the boutique at all, but what I'm saying is that I think it's also important for people to understand when it's time to have that evolution, you have to go in within and listen to your inner voice. And know that it's time. So share a little bit about that, because that was, you could have gone on and on. So what?
I had the opportunity to sell in 2016. And, you know, it just got to the point, you know, I mean, there's only so many bells you can ring. Mm-hmm. There's only so many months you can be number one. I was on the National Dealer Council, which Mr. Mark Ioanni appointed me to. So I kind of knew the writing on the wall for the Fiat brand. I knew that it would be going away, which it is. And there'd be, you know, anyways, so, you know, I knew a lot of things that were coming. I was, you know, it was time for me to go do my thing, right? To take what the success I'd had. I wanted some freedom, you know, running a car dealership. I was working 6 days a week. I was an owner and I couldn't even take a day off. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. And so, I wanted to go live. And so at that point, so March 16th, actually happiest day of my life of 2016, mm-hmm. I sold the dealership. I co-authored a book with my best friend, Renee Bangelsdorf, Crushing Mediocrity. We went on some speaking tours. I was picked up by an agent in New York. And so they booked me pretty heavily to speak, you know, as a former woman car dealer. I did a TV show in Canada called Car Sharks in Toronto. And the premise was, it was five car dealers, four guys and me. And so that was interesting. Everyone should do reality television once in a lifetime. I'm kidding, because it's terrible. Mm-hmm. And so I was very heavily booked speaking and consulting. And then March of 2020 hits. I'd already spoke. I'd already had four huge keynotes. I had done Bloomberg, Citrix, North American Van Lines, and Miracle-Ear, all their big corporate retreats and their corporate conferences. And I was in Chicago with North American Van Lines, and then I was the closing keynote speaker, and the van and the meeting planner said, "We got to get you out of here tonight." I was like, "I'm meeting with the leadership in the morning. Why?" And she said, "Because Chicago's getting ready to go into lockdown." Mm-hmm. I'm like, "For what?" Like, I'm still like not getting it. And she's mm-hmm. like, "Oh, the COVID coronavirus." And I'm like, "Really? I thought I was still in China." Like, I was so clueless to it. Like, mm-hmm. and so I got home and just everything started canceling.
Everything. I mean, you know, I say to people, you know, I've been through a lot of personal tsunamis and pandemics and things, but yeah. I've never been told to close my door and lock it. Yeah. Never. So, so here you came home and the world shut down.
Yeah.
And so you could not go back out into the speaking world that you were building and building. And mm-hmm. so you then evolved one more time.
I'm thinking, what is the only thing in the world I haven't done so far? I've owned a boutique and insurance. I got, yeah, right. And I was like, I'm going to get a real estate license because, you know, we still own our mortgage company. And so I was like, you know, I'll sell one or two a month because I know everybody and that would be great. And so I went and got my real estate license. And as fate would have it, I've got a very dear friend who, in fact, I will give him a little plug. He wrote the book, The Listing Boss, Haas Pratt. And he and I had the same agent in New York. And so we got to know each other pretty well. And he was out on the road speaking and doing a lot of stuff. And so I had just gotten my license and he called me. I guess I put something on Facebook maybe. And anyways, he called me, which I like to say, answer the call. People call. And he goes, "Do you have a real estate license, Lisa?" And I said, "I do." He goes, "So you're not speaking. You're not doing TV." I go, "I'm not. I'm going to be a realtor, Haas." And he goes, "You need to get to Dallas." He said, "You know, do you know Tarek El Moussa from HGTV?" And I'm like, "Well, no, but I watch his show and I love him. I think he's great." And he goes, "Well, I got a unique opportunity for you and we need you." So that was probably like the end of March or maybe the 1st of April. I'm so bad with dates. And it was the first time I'd like left my house besides to go to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited. I told my husband, I said, "I'm driving to Dallas tomorrow." And he's like, "Why?" I said, "So I can meet with Haas and Tarek and they have a deal." And he was like, "Oh God, here we go. Okay." And so the rest is history. And it's been game changing. And I will tell you, of all of the deals I've done, this has been the best.
Well, share a little bit about eXp Realty. Share it with our viewers a little bit about it, because there are many people that are sitting at home right now, maybe continuing to work at their job, whatever that might be, but their job has changed dramatically and their lives around it have changed dramatically. And they may have not gotten their real estate license yet, but they are saying, "What am I going to do?"
Yeah.
How, you know, what is out there? Because that I see is one of the most dicey things is people are not clear on what will be, you know, available to them. And so share a little bit about the company itself and the background to this company.
Yeah, thank you for asking. So, you know, this has been the first time in since I left my own mortgage company that I have had a team, that I've had a leadership team that we are so all in for each other and for the company that it's so pure at like every crazy level. I can message Tarek at whatever time. "I need this, I need that, da, da, da." I mean, like, he's like, "Let's do this." And so eXp, you know, so we are brokered by eXp Realty, but eXp is a publicly traded company. It's 10 years old. When I started with the company, my stock was at $17. It's now at $76
wow.
as of today. Unbelievable. I'm just watching like my 401k and luckily I made an investment and like, it's nuts. But really, you know, there's just so many different facets to it. But the thing there's two parts I love about it. Number one is that we have the fastest and largest growing team within eXp and probably one of the ones in the country and in the world, because we are a global company. So I've got agents in Canada and Mexico and all over the place. That we help people, you know, we help agents and we teach them how to build generational wealth. And the generational wealth is both from agent attraction. That means building up their own global brokerage. But we also teach them what Tarek has done. And that is how to flip houses, how to invest, how to flip and hold, how to, you know, and all of that. And so we are just as much about educating our our leaders, our agents, our teammates on financial literacy for themselves, mm-hmm. as we are showing them how to best serve their clients and to show other people, AKA their clients, how they can build generational wealth through real estate. Because there is no, if all the companies in the world I've ever owned, I've never made more money than when I have flipped a piece of real estate.
It's and what's interesting,
you'll never lose in real estate ever, never, not one time. If you hold it long enough, you'll never lose money.
And that, you know, I watch his show all the time and love that station. Keep it on often. Yeah. And it's so interesting how, like you said, that whole process of flipping a home, but most and not everyone can do that, you know. So what you're saying is that there's a piece to this that you can be part of it without actually, you know, doing demo day. And so
Oh, my goodness. Yes. I mean, the majority of our team does not flip homes. They don't have the wherewithal to do it. But, you know, but we actually, I mean, we have the money. If one of our agents wants, you know, finds a great deal and brings us the package and it pencils, we will fund it. I mean, so there's that. We will fund it. We will show you how to do it. I spent all weekend on with Tarek and a couple of the guys on the team. Like, we did like a 9-hour training, and I was like, my brain hurt when I was done. But it's just really important to be able to, for me to go be able to train our team on it, and then to even educate the consumers. You know, flipping is not for everybody, but I will tell you, so many people are sitting on homes right now that if they would, you know, improve the kitchen, improve the bathroom, mm-hmm. you throw $20,000 in it, you're going to get $60,000-$70,000 in return due to what's going on in our real estate market today and the scarcity of it. So it's really about building and teaching our clients, my clients, how to build generational wealth, how to build equity, how to make a small investment in their current home that will 10x within a couple of years, so that when it's time for them to go sell that home, that you know, that they make so much more money on it. So it's very multifaceted.
Say it again.
I said, I love the multifacetedness of the whole thing.
That is what really fascinates and interests me, is because here we are in Texas, but we both know people all over the world mm-hmm. who are realtors. So you could potentially be involved with this.
Yeah. I mean, in the last week, we have opened in India, Portugal, France, Mexico, and I'm missing one. But isn't that enough? And then we're in every province in Canada, and we're in the UK, and we're in South Africa. So it's like, you know, so it's just, it's to me, it's interesting because I'm not like stuck in Cedar Park, Texas, right? Mm-hmm. So I have conversations now with people all over the world. You know, we're looking to bring on a big team out of Mexico. Now, interesting, fun fact, in Mexico, you do not have to have a real estate license. So EXP has figured out how to put this whole thing together. So talking to people from around the world, I spend so much time on Skype and webinars. My husband's always like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm talking to somebody in South Africa who's thinking about opening or, you know, moving their real estate brokerage with us. Mm-hmm. So it's so interesting. And I think that's what I need at this point in my life. I need something that like stimulates my brain, makes me really think, and the highest and best use of me is strategy. I'm a strategist. Mm-hmm. I look at all my businesses. We win because I have a plan. I go in with a plan and I know how to execute. So I really like helping agents and what we call indie brokers, which are independent brokers. I love helping them create a strategy, a plan, and then coming with us so we can help them execute.
And the other thing, back to your whole story, you don't have to worry about a brick and mortar structure.
No.
It is global and they're without walls, and you can utilize all of your talents and expertise and background with everything that we've talked about here, that with this experience, with this structure of EXP Realty.
It's fun. It's a technology. It's a cloud-based company. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, Megan, that has stretched me, because we are so technologically based that there are days I'm just like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, you know, it's a lot, you know, and to learn the technology and to learn the systems and all the things. So I am stretched on a daily basis. And I will tell you, I'm up at about 7:30 up here in my office every morning. And it's because I'm taking more classes and I'm learning more about the technology and the systems and everything we're doing, because we are a global brokerage now. And that's what Tarek and has really tasked me with is, you know, making really, you know, bringing in more of a global group. Mm-hmm. You know, and around the world. And that to me is so darn interesting.
Very much so, Lisa, but I have to commend you, and I'm sure everyone who's listening to this and who will listen subsequently on the podcast, to bravo, just applaud you, because honestly, that is one of the challenges I have personally, you know, is all that technology. But I'm not going to stop, and I will not stop, and I will continue, because ultimately what you and I, you know, have in common is that we truly want to help others grow as well.
We do. And you and I are just, we're not the youngest chicks in the world anymore. I mean, I could bring my 8-year-old grandson up here, Eli, and he would have, he'd be like, la, this is all you have to do. Right. So our brains were just wired differently.
Yes. We don't have, it's not the years and years of experience. And on some level, it's, I don't want to use the word fear, but it's like, oh, can I do that? Is that, you know,
yes, it's scary,
you know, wrong? Yes, it is that as well. And so the more you do, the more you see that you can do it. So it's, but it's
and
not.
And when, I just want to tell everybody of a certain age, and I don't know what that age is, but I have learned by taking on this monster almost, I feel like, of technology, of being a global firm. Mm-hmm. Every little win I have, I celebrate. And I will just encourage you guys and gals, if you stick with whatever you're trying to learn in technology, you'll learn something tomorrow, today, that you will go, okay, tomorrow. And you'll go one step in front of the other. And I'm so far ahead in the last 30 days because I just haven't given up.
Haven't given up. Haven't stopped.
Yep.
Well, speaking of stopping, we could go on, and I look at it, and our time is coming to a close. But Lisa, you have a very, very close dear friend, and she's becoming a friend of Sharon Lecter.
Yes.
And I always close the show with this, with about 3 feet from gold, mm-hmm. And Sharon's and Greg's success formula, you know, and it's passion plus talent. Talent plus passion times association plus talent plus faith equals success. Now, I'm not going to ask you all of those, but what I ask everyone is, what is your passion and what is your talent?
Okay. My passion is to leave the world a better place than I found it and to empower others, especially women. So that is my passion. And my talent is that I'm really good at teaching people how to build a strategic plan. Because I can look at any business, I can close my eyes, and within a second or two, I'm like, okay, here's what you need to do, right? Mm-hmm. And so that is my talent. And but my passion is to empower others. I just, mm-hmm. just makes it a better planet. And that's the reason you can pick up the phone when you need a favor and you get a favor.
Amen. And that's truth, folks. That's truth. And you know, that's a great closing for December 18th, a week before Christmas.
Yes.
And I thank you so much for being with me. And I hope that we have, and you, Lisa, have just empowered people to really take that first step. And if you're in that step, don't stop. Keep going.
That's it. Don't quit. Don't let fear bind you up. Walk out on faith. And I just want to wish all of your listeners and everybody watching today a very Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and just go into 2021 with the mindset that you're going to crush it.
Amen. Amen. Will you hang in the green room for a little bit, Miss Lisa, and we'll see in a few minutes.
Okay.
Wow, wow, wow. Well, I hope you were as empowered as I know a lot of Lisa's story, but the essence and different little nuggets that I learned during this was so, so lovely and so empowering. So just know that we are all here for you. You can reach Lisa. Her information will be in the text of this. And she mentioned her book, Crushing Mediocrity, and she has another book about the auto industry. I really suggest, you know, purchasing those, but following her on her social media. And if you have any interest in eXp Realty, do contact Lisa Copeland. So we will see you. And actually, I'm going to be on next Friday. I'm going to be interviewing. I'm going to tape it, though, with my niece, Gabriella McNamara. And Gabriella has a very unique story, but highly affected by this very challenging time. She has a PR company, and two of her major clients are Princess Cruise Line and the city of Orlando. But she hasn't stopped, and she will not stop. So her story, she will share her story next Friday on Christmas Day. So have a wonderful week. Merry Christmas. Have a beautiful, beautiful week, and be blessed.
Thank you for listening to the Unique Leaders Podcast. If we said something today that resonated with you, please connect with me at megandemartino.com. I have a free gift for you, my book, Hope and Possibilities Just Over the Horizon. It's never too early or too late to create the life of your dreams. And don't forget to head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. I would truly appreciate it. Be blessed.